The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
It's Beat. You're listening to The Sunday Grill and we're talking all about media literacy this week. And let's start off by talking about doom scrolling. What a word. I'm definitely guilty of it. But what is the effect of constantly consuming the same topics on your handheld device? And how can we stop it if we need to? Well, in a minute, I'll be talking to Paddy Moran. He's a neuroculture coach based here in the Southeast. But first, we sent Aisling Maloney out to ask people what they thought doom scrolling was. What is their doom scroll of choice? Have a listen.
My name's Mia, I'm from Waterford.
Yeah, my name's Sophie and I'm from Waterford.
My name's Leisha, I'm from Kilkenny.
What are you seeing on your phones? Like, what content is keeping you online for hours and hours?
Mostly kind of just like get ready with me's, like vlogs, like all vlogs, especially like Vlogmas, like all like influencers doing like Vlogmas now, like that would kind of like keep me scrolling.
What about for yourself?
I'd probably be the same as Mia now, to be honest, but I also do love a good mukbang on TikTok.
People eating.
When I'm starving, I don't like all them like videos always come up on my For You page. It's so funny. But yeah, I do love a good mukbang now.
Okay, so eating videos. Okay, I love that. How for yourself?
No, I'm like the same. It's like day in the lives, like families and stuff, or like hauls, like for all different clothes Christmas and haul, what they buy, especially the Christmas ones.
Yeah. I think it's like also like the algorithm and like all like that. Like once you like one video, just like constantly, like the next video will be the same, and then after that, so you just like get like really locked into it.
Yeah, sometimes it can be negative. Like there was we were doing our mocks, there was the leaks, and obviously some of us didn't want to see the leaks, but they were all over our For You page, so you're kind of nearly forced into seeing
them. Like at a certain hour, like in the night, like I feel like TikTok just changes, like it's just like,
especially with the live videos,
live videos, and like just like weird content just shows up, like you wouldn't be interested at all, but it's like in the night time, it's just like, I don't know, it goes to like dark mode or something. It's just like weird.
It does. Like a witching hour or something.
Yeah, it's like, it's weird. Like, and then that's when I turn off my phone and like realize, I'll be like, oh God, I need to go to bed. Like,
there you go. That was Aisling Maloney out and about asking people what doom scrolling was and what their doom scrolling subject of choice is. I'm joined now with Paddy Moran. He's a neuroculture coach based here in the Southeast. You're very welcome back to the Sunday Grill, Paddy.
It's great to talk with you again, Orla.
We love this subject, don't we, Paddy? You love talking negatively about the phone.
we love it.
Now, are you a doom scroller? No, I know you're a really good person for putting your phone away, but is there a certain subject that will come up again and again on your algorithm, Paddy?
I suppose for me, I have...
Honest.
There's this... a training exercise I give people to do, intentional algorithm training.
Okay.
So what I have done with my, my algorithm is it's only feeding me what I'm liking, what I'm sharing, what I'm commenting on. So I try not, like I'll avoid the news, anything negative. Now it's taken me a long time to get to that, but I very seldom will see something.
So it's all negative. Talking dogs on your Instagram, is it?
It's all dogs, animals, nature, anything that makes me smile.
Mine is quite like that as well. It's all talking dogs, funny memes, cooking, but they mightn't be negative, but we are consuming things and the same subject again and again and again. Are there any negatives to that, no matter how positive the content might be?
Yeah, because what we'll be doing here is we could be creating like a fixed mindset. Just seeing, you know, what we want to see. We're not expanding our thinking. So I'd always say, you know, what else could be of interest to me? Is there other things that may, you know, spark an interest and a sense of joy within me? So, yeah, because like if I'm just looking at dogs the whole time, it's actually going to get, the brain is going to go, Paddy, I'm bored now.
Okay.
Give me something new. So we should be, you know, looking for content that will, you know, spark joy. Learning content is great.
Okay. Yeah.
Learning content where we can go away and go, oh, there's something new. That's great from a novelty point of view, and our brain will love that.
Okay. But even if that's great, is it great to be looking at that for maybe 3 hours a day?
Absolutely not. Okay. Absolutely not.
Okay.
No. And because when you look at that, you know, we use that, you know, the term doom scrolling.
Mm-hmm. And how would you describe that?
Yeah, for me, kind of like when you hear doom scrolling, it's it's like a negative thing. But what you've just said there is, but Patty, you're looking at, you know, positive stuff. Mm. Can you spend hours on your phone? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I can spend hours on my phone. And, you know, so kind of looking, I just say, okay, so what's, you know, healthy scrolling and unhealthy scrolling?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause what's actually happening, say, from a neuroscience point of view, it's our dopamine system is, if the more we're on social media, we're getting this spike and then we're getting a lull. Okay, so we get a spike, then we get a crash. Okay. But probably the best way to describe it, Orla, if you didn't have your car in gear and you kept revving it and revving it and revving it, okay,
mm-hmm.
eventually your car is going to burn out.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's the same with this stuff. So if I'm going on, like, because we're getting this quick dopamine hit from social media, and that's what's making it addictive.
Mm-hmm.
So we get this big spike in dopamine, we feel good, then we get a crash, and that eventually what happens to us is we're going to start feeling demotivated, distractive, depressive. Yes. Symptoms will start coming into play. Yeah.
And is that the most, you know, the not a minor issue, but almost like a small percentage of people will find that's what happens? Or does that happen to most of us, this demotivation from doom scrolling?
That'll happen to the majority of us.
Wow.
Yeah.
Gosh, that answers a lot of questions about how our phones affect us as well. Because I do think, like, demotivation and it is a real issue these days, isn't it?
Yeah, because, like, and it's you know, when you think about people getting up in the morning, from the moment if they're getting up and social media is the first thing, you're getting this huge spike, and before they get to work, they're getting this crash, and then they're looking for another spike. And social media is the quickest way for us to get this spike in dopamine, but it's not a healthy way.
Yes. And I even find it, like, I didn't have my phone with me yesterday, and I was constantly wondering, like, WhatsApp is a social media as well. I was constantly wondering about if I had messages. And so that's another version of it. It doesn't have to be videos on TikTok or Reels or Shorts or stuff like that.
Yeah, no, because it's like, because we're so used to having it, it's like we go out and we forget our phone. We're constantly, I wonder what's happening. So your brain is going, give me a little hit of dopamine, please.
Okay.
You know, rather than, you know, and I say, so yesterday, you probably felt better yesterday as a result of.
Yes, I got more done, to tell you the truth. I really did. Yes. Yeah. But I did wonder about, you know, the people that I follow and whether I have WhatsApps from people as well. But I didn't. So I might as well have forgotten about it. Let's talk about, can it have physical issues, doom scrolling? You know, I know it can be really bad for your sleep, for example. So it would cause fatigue and sleep issues. Are there other physical things we need to think about?
Yeah, well, even if you, depending on what you're consuming, right? And because our brain is naturally wired to be alert to potential threats, you know, and it's a survival mechanism. It's what our brain does.
Mm-hmm.
So what our brain is going to do is looking for negative stuff. So if I'm consuming negative information on social media, so how's that going to physically? So actually, my heart rate is going to go up.
Okay.
I'm probably going to start perspiring, because what's happening is cortisol, which is a stress hormone, is being released into my system.
Okay.
So it is going to have physical and a mental impact on us.
Now, how do we stop, Paddy? Do we need to stop?
We'll never stop. We have to get used. Like, so social media is a thing, you know, you depend on it, I depend on it. Well, probably depend is too strong a word, but it's part of our lives.
It is. It's part of my work,
Yeah, it's part of your work. And, you know, I work with a PR company, and it's like social digital marketing is huge for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, you know, they'll say to me, Paddy, what do we do, you know, if we're consuming all this information and if it's having a negative impact, you know, how can we slow this down, I suppose?
Mm.
So I suppose the first thing I would say to people is what I mentioned there earlier, is this intentional algorithm training.
Okay.
So actively engage in content, you know, that makes you smile, makes you feel good.
Okay.
You know, so for me, it's animals, it's nature. So actively engage in that, like, share, comment and post. Okay? And when we do that, the algorithm will start to feed that information to us.
Okay.
So be mindful of, you know, so when we're seeing something, you know, negative, that's going to trigger a threat response. So it turns on the limbic system in our brain.
Okay.
And when we're working from that part of our brain, we can't do our best work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's the first thing I kind of say to people is, you know, train your algorithm, okay, to give you more positive information.
Okay.
When we see negative information, there's, like, we call this a 3-to-1 progress rule. Mm. You know, so every, say, challenging piece of information or content that you might see, seek 3 pieces of positive information.
Okay.
So actively go look.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's a simple thing to do. And then, so another thing that I would do, and when we take say we're after having a little bit of a social media session, and I've been on social media for 15 minutes.
15 minutes, okay.
I'm very optimistic.
You are.
So if we're after seeing, you know, even to notice when I'm reading content, how is that actually making me feel? So is it making me feel good?
Think about that. Okay.
Yeah, is it making me feel negative? Because stuff is going to pop up that you won't like. Mm. But, you know, so when we finish, say, having a session on social media, even just for 30 seconds, okay, just sit and notice 3 things in your immediate environment.
Okay.
Okay. So this could be, you know, I'm sitting at a desk now, you're sitting at a desk probably as well.
Yeah.
You know, notice the texture of the desk.
Okay.
You know, look out the window, notice the shape of the clouds.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
What we want to do is get a release of the slow dopamine, whereas do things that take effort, you know.
Yeah. So the daylight, a bit of exercise. Yeah. Bit of gratitude that I know you're a fan of as well, Patty. All the things.
Big, big fan of gratitude. Yeah,
certainly are. Brilliant. Well, some great advice there on doom scrolling and its negative effects. Has it any positive effects? Can you even think of anything or nothing?
No.
No. Okay.
It really, you know, and the scary thing is, Orla, is, you know, I think I mentioned this before, is, you know, prior to the first iPhone in, I think it's 2008.
Oh, yes. Give us the stat again. This is terrifying.
Yeah. I was spending like an average of, I think it was 17, 19 minutes a day on our phone. Yeah. And now the average person is spending 5 to 6 hours.
Wow. Well, that is Paddy Morn. And he is a neuro-organisational culture coach. You can find him, ironically, on social media at Paddy Morn Neuro Training and Consulting. You have a website as well, though, Paddy, do you?
The website is aresilientbrain.com.
Great. And that's what we're aiming for, a resilient brain. That is aresilientbrain.com. And that is Paddy Morn Neuro Training and Consultant. Thank you so much for joining me, Paddy.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.
It's the Sunday Grill and our social media literacy special on this, the last Sunday of 2025. And what does it take to become a social media influencer? And what can you do to keep followers engaged? Well, reporter Aisling Maloney met some social media content creators from the Southeast to ask them about their journey online.
This is your studio. Tell me a little bit about your studio here.
So it's a very simple setup. I actually have one of these little sticky things on the back of the phone, which are fantastic. You just stick it straight onto the window there and it's ready to go. So I press record.
So I'm over on TikTok with nearly 250,000 followers now, and we just hit 140,000 on Instagram, and people can find me there at Edgar Kirby.
Dungarvan man Edgar Kirby is one of the most popular social media content creators in the Southeast, filling people's feeds with simple food recipes and weight loss advice.
If I wanted to feel a little bit better in myself by this day next week, here's the type of meal that I would eat. 3 large carrots, washed, no need to peel. Cut on the diagonal, about 1/2 inch thick.
COVID-19 lockdowns forced the dance teacher to slow down, and he began sharing his weight loss journey online.
That's when the shift happened on social media.
And I started sharing my weight loss journey. I said it was time to do something about this. So I started sharing recipes and they almost immediately resonated with people. And I think, of course, a bit of personality helps too. You know, a bit of entertainment, a bit of crack. That's important. It's not robotic. It's delivered in a very natural, authentic way.
But it didn't happen overnight. It's kind of 5 years in the making then, would you say?
Most the first year or two was kind of playing around and figuring out, what am I doing in this space? Who am I in this space? And what do I want to be for people? And I suppose they saw that transformation right in front of their very eyes, you know.
Did you ever have, I suppose, a viral moment or a moment, a video, something that took off and really got a lot of followers on board?
Recently, I shared a video about simple eating. It was a tray bake, loads of veggies, into the oven, roast it, make a bit of chicken, a bit of salmon, whatever to go with it. It was that simple. And I think it's over 600,000 views now. And that video alone brought in over 35,000 followers on Instagram.
Clearly a following that's hungry for content, but how does he keep them coming back for more?
Real balance between, you know, keeping things in reality and not chasing numbers. Because if you're just chasing numbers on there, you're never going to create long-term quality and a community that stands by you. And the people that follow me, some of them are with me since day one.
While some scroll for leisure, others scroll for sport.
My name is Sean Carroll. I have 126,000 on TikTok and over 23,000 on Instagram. I suppose the content I kind of do is based around hurling, Gaelic football, Camogie. Love the hurling. Being from Kilkenny, that's kind of all we do. So hurling content is always going to be number one. I use kind of hurling as a tool nearly to promote like my videos, you know.
Swastika crash. So this is day one. I'm me trying to get a sideline over the bar and into my hurling helmet. You can probably see it behind the goal there.
Following in the footsteps of the two Johnnies and Rory's stories, Sean started posting his sketches about GAA on Facebook while he was still at school.
I posted a video like playing hurling just with a guitar kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it got like, I think it was like 30k views. Like, and again, it's not a lot, but that more than anything I've ever got before. So
Sean's funny sketches online have led him to working with Beat 102-103, interviewing GA players on the All-Stars red carpet and showing NFL icons how to use a hurley.
I'm trying to see what you got going on here.
Do you ever have hurling, though?
No.
Well, you heard of it now. A lot of the time it is off the cuff, though. Like, if I do like a lot of sketches, like I could be playing like a manager and a player, and it's kind of just things you'd see, like say if I was at a hurling match, things you'd see on like the sideline. And I think the team I play with are kind of like not a bit quieter now, but to be afraid I'd be imitating them now on online. Wait.
Hi, I'm Faya, known as the viral spice bag girl from Wexford, and I've over 50,000 followers on TikTok, and I have at least a million monthly listeners, people that are viewing my content, watching it every single month, which is an insane number because I know radio stations have that kind of viewership. So to think that little old me could manage to achieve that kind of thing that's the same is wild.
Look at these chicken balls. In case you need another reminder, let's get cheeky takeaway. Let me show us what we got.
Prawn crackers, of course.
Faya started posting on TikTok during lockdown with funny sketches about Irish mammies, but this quickly morphed into videos about comfort food. And after she was diagnosed with autism in her 20s, she leant in to more sensory-friendly content.
The video that took off for me, that gave me so many more new followers and new faces to see, was definitely the spice bag. I was sitting in my bed, pajamas on, not a scrap of makeup, lads. You should have seen me.
So would you say your secret sauce of gaining social media followers is more in the spice bag sauce than anything you've cracked yourself?
Yeah, I definitely do. And probably will be for life.
That was Wexford influencer Faya, who you can find online with I Am Faya, along with Sean Carroll at Sean Carroll Official from Kilkenny, and Edgar Kirby, who you can find with at Edgar Kirby from Waterford.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
You're listening to The Sunday Grill here on Beat and our social media literacy special. Let's look at algorithms, which are, I think we all think we know what algorithms are, but they're defined as rules and calculation platforms used to sort, rank and personalise content in your feed, so it'll show you stuff that you're most likely to engage with rather than what's the newest. So it's all about keeping you on the platform for longer. We're going to talk now to Alex Cooney. She is the CEO and co-founder of CyberSafe Kids, and they're a trusted advocate for online safety. They empower children, parents and educators to navigate the internet safely and confidently. And she joins me on the Sunday Grill this morning and this social media literacy special to talk algorithms. It's just such a, you're very welcome, Alex. It just, all of a sudden, algorithms was a buzzword about 5 or 6 years ago. It took me a while to realise what people were talking about, or maybe I had to go and look it up myself. But it's all about the algorithm, isn't it?
It is. And you're right. It's a term that's bandied around quite a lot, and it probably took us, you know, common understanding to catch up with the bandying around of the word. Mm-hmm. But you've already provided a good description of what it is. It's essentially a way of processing and sorting content so that, you know, what you see in your feeds is something you might be interested in seeing in it, in that's kind of in its simplest form. And I think it was first used, I may be wrong on this, but kind of first used in a very large scale way by Amazon to recommend books.
Okay.
Which makes sense, right?
Yes.
Like you read this book, you might be interested in these two books, or you might be interested in books by the same author. You rated this book 5 stars, you know, then other people who read this book and rated it 5 stars also read this book. So you might be interested
in that.
Works. Yeah, it kind of works. But it was in, I think it was maybe Sheryl Sandberg, she of the Lean In fame from Meta, or when it was in its Facebook days, she became the chief operating officer. I think she recognized the potential from a kind of marketing and advertising perspective for Facebook as a company. So they started to change the way they delivered content through their feed. So it wasn't just based on, you know, who your friends were or the timeline, like the chronological timeline. It was more and more based on what they thought, or the algorithm thought you were interested in.
Okay.
And then TikTok came along and kind of totally upped the ante by introducing this really quite aggressive way of recommending content to the feed. And it sort of was based on, you know, you might have lingered on something. So it's literally focusing on the time that you're spending on something, the kind of number of times you've looked at something similar. And I think, and I'm not going to, you know, put this to any one company, but I think there was broadly a recognition that the more, you know, what are the sort of emotions that cause us to look at something longer? Like, we know that fear and anger and shock can, you know, even if you didn't want to look at something, sometimes you find yourself kind of lingering on it, you know? And that starts to become a dominant feature, that whatever that content relates to becomes a dominant feature of
in your
feed.
In your algorithm.
So,
okay.
In your algorithm. Yeah. So, and then YouTube, you know, also. So they're all at it.
And I think we know the answer to this, but why is that dangerous? And it's a hard one to even ask. I know why a company would do that. It's a marketing ploy, but don't you often wonder, do they not see the dangers behind it as well while they're doing it?
Yeah, look, there's kind of a few aspects to that that we probably need to unpack. So the first is, like, I'd probably characterize them as problematic, maybe over dangerous. They can be dangerous because of the type of content that they might be recommending. I think they're problematic because of this, you know, you'll heard this term rabbit hole effect, that you end up kind of going down this rabbit hole of a particular type of content. And it's particularly concerning in relation to children, because we've seen, there's been research by like the Anti-Bullying Center here in Ireland, looking at the type of content that's being recommended to boys in particular.
Yes, that's so what I was about to ask you. It can be quite gender specific, the sort of...
Right.
Yes.
And, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
so boys getting more of this kind of manosphere, anti-feminist, misogynistic type narrative. So the study that DCU carried out found that within 23 minutes of setting up an account on TikTok and YouTube, that this sort of they were getting this kind of content, and then very rapidly it was getting more and more kind of toxic in nature, And from my memory from that study, YouTube was worse than TikTok. So I think it was TikTok was a third of all content. YouTube was like two thirds of all content. So it's overwhelming. If you think of two thirds of all the content you're seeing, it relates to this one sort of topic. Girls, it's more, and there's been, again, studies on this by the likes of the Center for Countering Digital Hate. It's more kind of body image, self-esteem, makeup.
Just as problematic.
Equally problematic in the context of really kind of growing numbers of things like eating disorders. Mm-hmm. Like, we know in Ireland that the number one psychiatric reason for admission to hospital amongst children in Ireland is eating disorders. So, you know, that is really concerning. And the extent to which these social media feeds are driving those trends, we don't know yet, honestly, but there is a concern and a suspicion that it is contributing for sure.
Okay. And when you're talking about social media, I'm obviously thinking that what I use, so the TikToks, the Instagrams, then for younger kids who use Snapchat a huge amount for messaging a lot, but it's also the YouTubes. And is it therefore the YouTube kids as well?
Yes, although YouTube kids would be more like, you know, you would expect that the recommendations are more age appropriate.
Okay.
Now, it's not totally guaranteed. There's been obviously evidence that there are dodgy interpretations of like Peppa Pig, you know, that people are basically messing with the algorithm to see if they can get around it and so on. But I think that there was a, just going back to your earlier question, like about why they might be dangerous, is the idea that these companies are doing this to children in specifically, is it appropriate that companies are profiling and targeting children in this way? Like this idea that a child of 10 could be sent down a rabbit hole of eating disorder type content is just crazy. And all for the commercial gain of that company.
Yes.
Like, I just,
and obviously we're not talking about all companies that end up in the algorithm, you know, a child's algorithm. It's, you know, is it a small percentage that are profiling like that?
No. Okay. I think this is a common practice. So I don't think this is a widely used practice. It is absolutely for commercial gain. And what we've got to stop thinking is that they'll, you know, do things in the best interest of children. They'll say that they do things in the best interest of children, but these algorithms are trained for one thing and one thing only, and that's engagement. Okay. I'm not saying that they're setting out to harm kids, but that is the consequence.
So then what can we do as parents or as, you know, older siblings or even ourselves to protect ourselves from this?
Yes. So I think, under the theme of media literacy, I think we need to do a lot more to educate young people and adults who are equally subject to the recommender algorithm. You know, we need to be recognizing and reporting as well. The idea is under our new national kind of online safety code that it should be a lot easier to report harmful content, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're somebody who's, you know, online and you're exposed either through your recommender system or because somebody shared something, you can report that content and you should report that content. And it's incumbent on that company, whoever's behind that service, to respond to your complaint and ideally remove it. What we've historically heard is that they're not always responsive to complaints and they're not always great at taking stuff down. So it is, you know, that's important to note. Like, do note if you have reported something and you haven't got a response. Commissioner Mann is saying that, you know, you can report it to them. They're not going to intervene yet because they have not set up an individual complaints mechanism as yet, but they will log it and they will take note if there is a particular company that is, you know, exhibiting a kind of pattern of behavior around non-response or
when you say company, it's a company that's using social media as a platform, not the social media platform.
No, I mean the social media
you
platform.
Mean the social media platform. Okay, good.
Yeah,
good. So
our national law, it covers video sharing platforms based in the state.
Okay.
So it doesn't cover any gaming platforms. Which is, so that's another thing. I mean, and gaming platforms also pose risks and also use recommender systems in some cases as well. Our online safety code applies to the likes of Google in terms of YouTube. It applies to TikTok. It applies to Instagram, Facebook, X, and a number of other, I think Reddit is on that list. So they have a number of, but those are all headquartered here. Okay. So those are the companies they're particularly interested in. We also have a responsibility to kind of coordinate the regulation of any of the very large online services or platforms that are, or search engines who are based in the state as well. So we have kind of added responsibilities, yeah.
So you can get more details of that on Commissioner Naman's website. It's cnam.ie.
Yes.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Alex, thank you for that. Very engaging, but quite scary conversation about algorithms. It is a minefield, isn't it? And even as adults, it's a minefield. But
it is, and it doesn't always have to be like for bad use. Like I gave that Amazon example, yes, where it's actually quite useful. Like you might actually get content, like, you know, on my feed, I get a lot of kind of cooking content.
Oh,
for example,
I was about to say, I can make amazing roast potatoes, and it's definitely thanks to my algorithms.
So. Exactly. So it doesn't always have to be bad. The issue is the way that a lot of children are experiencing this, and the kinds of the profiling and how that translates into what they're then seeing.
Yes.
That should not be acceptable.
And that is Alex Cooney. She is the CEO and co-founder of Cyber Safe Kids, and you will find Cyber Safe Kids on their website, cybersafekids.ie. Alex, thanks a million.
Thank you.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
We spoke about algorithms and the dangers associated with them in the last hour when it comes to the content that keeps being thrown up for different genders and age groups. Well, now Garda Deirdre O'Neill joins me on the Sunday Grill to talk about online radicalisation and how quickly people can become swept up by dangerous content on social media. It sounds like a really serious topic, and I think for a lot of people we believe that it doesn't apply to us. I think Deirdre might disagree as a Garda, and she joins me this morning. You're very welcome. Radicalisation is such a strong word, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is a very pertinent issue to discuss because it's affecting an awful lot of younger people maybe who are vulnerable and easily targeted. And I suppose from Garda Síochána's point of view, we're looking at the criminality associated with this. So some of these groups do have violent ideology. And I suppose you see the mainstream social media platforms, they use AI, they will try and take down this type of content. But when you go into private chats, it becomes a little bit more sinister.
And by private chats, what do you mean? Like WhatsApp groups?
Yeah, WhatsApp groups or Discord or any of these new ones that are popping up. And even on gaming consoles, you know, when you go into a particular group. So I suppose from what we look at is, even though maybe that young person is been targeted and encouraged and facilitated with alternative views, it becomes an issue for us if their views, even if they can be extreme, they can be, you know, contrary to what maybe most of us would consider, but it's when they breach the democratic rules and people's human rights and they edge people to do criminal acts. That's when you actually do need to consider, perhaps, if you think your child or someone you know is going down that road, is to seek help.
Okay.
And it's a tricky area.
It is.
You know, and it's a relatively new one, particularly in Ireland.
And like you said, when we think, well, I think social media, I think the Instagrams and the TikToks and the Facebooks even. But you're talking about many things that younger people use that perhaps their parents don't even know about.
Yeah. And it leads them to all sorts of sites that have, they're open source, but they have really, really horrendous, violent imagery of live of incidents that have occurred that, you know, where people have been murdered or, you know, assassinated and things like that. And that whole genre then kind of desensitizes people. And, you know, it leads to that kind of perception that this is okay.
Mm-hmm.
And as your previous speakers have spoken about, it kind of, it's a debate without two sides to it. So it just feeds into one narrative and it's a very strong influence.
And is it a case of a rabbit hole that you might click on one thing and then it continues? Or is it very specific to the group that might be targeting a certain age group or a certain gender and it just pops up? Or
no, I think it's a bit of both. But the rabbit hole, definitely it starts off with maybe humour and maybe somebody they know might feed into this. And then it becomes a little bit more serious and a little bit more edgy as time goes on. So like we're all familiar with when you click on a video about a kitten.
Yes.
All you get is kittens.
Yeah.
And even on TikTok, it says, there's a little icon on the top, it says for you. So it has assessed what your interests are. Mm. So it's a valid tool, but what it does, what these extreme ideology groups do is they don't apply any standard to it. They just want to pull people into their way of thinking.
Okay.
And that's the danger.
Okay. Do they target certain areas of the country, for example, or because we're seeing an awful lot of news stories about what happens in certain places?
Mm.
Are they areas or age groups? Or?
I think it's more age groups, and okay. It's more those vulnerable young people who are maybe on the edge of social groups or, you know, sports groups, like everybody is as a teenager. Mm. But unfortunately, social media will highlight that mm-hmm. for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then it brings you in with a bit of comfort talk and a bit of, mm. yeah, I understand this mirroring that they go on with. And suddenly you're in a group.
Yes.
And it's your group and no one else has access to it. Mm-hmm. And everything you say is wonderful and everything you voice and they're giving you positive reinforcement. So it's a really cynical and really effective way.
And I think that's what we... like maybe generalize with radicalization, that we do think it's for people who are very much on the edge of society. But
yeah,
what you're saying is it's maybe people who don't like a specific thing that their school makes like or don't feel they've found their tribe as yet.
100%. And I think it's a natural thing for kids in school to try and figure out who they are.
Mm.
And if they seek out alternative views, it's a gradual process. So you might look at your child and, you know, I suppose there are triggers, there are signs that you can identify. And teenagers by their nature are probably a little bit hard to read at mm-hmm. times. But it's that reclusiveness, that pulling back from things they may have been interested in. And probably one to watch out for is, you know, a disregard for authority.
Mm-hmm.
You know, female authority particularly can be a trigger to watch for. And not just disregard, but just kind of contempt
mm-hmm.
and, you know,
okay.
without a specific, because we can all look at a politician or someone in power and say, you know, oh, I don't agree with that. But it has a basis, whereas if it's general, it's something just to kind of have a watch over. And also it's to open a very gentle debate, because if you go in saying you're wrong, we all know that doesn't work. You have to kind of edge in and understand why they're thinking the way they're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And we would reiterate 100% if you feel that there's something that is extremely sinister there or you're not sure, contact an Garda Síochána, and we have specialised officers who can assist with that.
And what's the legalities behind it? What can you do as a Garda apart from advice?
Okay, well, there is the Harmful Communications Act, which mm-hmm. came in 2020, and that is something that can be used. But also I think there's a kind of consideration that these children or young people are victims and could be victims of child exploitation.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't go in hard to think that they're a suspect, yet some of the content they may have been voicing or mentioning could lead to criminality. So if they say something like, oh, you know, this particular group should be wiped out just on the basis of their ethnicity or their religion, then that's something that could be considered criminal.
Okay. So if your child or you say that, that could be considered criminal.
Yeah.
But if they got that in a message, could they go to the guards? Could you go to the guards about that?
Yes, 100%.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And what can happen in that case? That's an advice thing.
That's
then,
an advice thing, I think. And really, that's where we're looking to see. I mean, we have a unit that does analyse all these online different groups. And, you know, there's an awareness piece that's out there. The UK are a little bit further on than us, but they work closely with them because there's a tie in. I mean, as we know, sometimes what we see in the UK and the USA finds its way to our shores as well.
Yeah.
So we're probably at that stage now where there's a process to try and infiltrate and see what can we do to help. But yeah, advice is probably the big thing. But I suppose one of the most prominent cases that we've seen was the stabbing in Galway of the army chaplain,
mm-hmm.
which was like a prime example of this. And if you read the judge's notes on that, his whole commentary is around that type of radicalisation, the access young people have to social media and the content, particularly the content that they're exposed
mm-hmm.
to.
Mm-hmm. Is there light at the end of the tunnel, do you think?
I think so. I suppose even what we've done, what they've done in Australia, even though it won't fix anything, it gives maybe parents that little bit of edge to say, well, you can't have a phone or you can't have this till you're 16. And you do see kind of, you know, groups in their 20s who are pulling back from social media because it is designed to be addictive, and we all know. And, you know, you could be giving out to the kids to say, put down the phone, and you're there flicking through the news articles or, you know. So I think there is, it is a area that we have to kind of educate ourselves on. There is information online, and there's a really good EU directive that's come out, or an EU help line, which is called Help for You. And that is based for kids to access it. It's a really simple format, and also for parents who can go online and have a look.
Okay. And that website is just Help for You.
Yes, Help for You. Yeah.
Okay. Perfect stuff. Yes, if you just search for that, actually, and it's Help and the number 4 and You, and you'll see it there. It's a new digital platform to support young people facing online, all the various things that happen online and how they can be helped. And we've spoken all through this program about how, you know, the internet and social media can do such brilliant things. It can create communities, it can capture memories, but we really have to look at the other side of it as well, especially as we head into the new year, and we really do have fresh eyes on all the stuff that has happened thanks to all these things. I think the thing that you've really brought home to me, that it isn't just WhatsApp and TikTok and Instagram. You need to think about gaming.
You definitely need to think about gaming and just, I suppose, to open the conversation with the kids and to outline to them that not everyone is who they seem online.
Well, that is Garda Deirdre O'Neill. Thank you so much for coming in over Christmas week. And that website, again, is Help for You. It has a long website. It's europol.europa.eu. But if you do search for Help for You, you will find that new digital platform to support young people. Deirdre, thanks a million.
Thanks,
and
Orla.
Happy New Year.
And Happy New Year to you.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
It's the Sunday Grill and our social media literacy on this last Sunday of 2025. So let's talk about some of the positives of social media and the fact that it really can raise awareness on social, political and cultural issues by providing diverse voices with global platforms now to share information and mobilise action. During our sustainability radio series, Hours to Protect, I spoke to Wexford woman Cara Carney, who's using her social media platform and podcast to spread the word on sustainability and climate action. Her podcast is called Book of Leaves, if you want to search for it. And it's described as chats with eco-friendly people who are living climate-conscious lives and doing their bit for the planet.
Hours to Protect on Beat.
Let's talk about climate activism. It comes in many shapes and forms, from Greta Thunberg furiously attacking world leaders at the United Nations.
We are in the beginning of a mass extinction, and all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you?
To local grassroots activists and even Irish sustainability influencers empowering us to make a change for the good of the planet.
This is on sale for Black Friday. Was 10 euro, now 9. Stop. Take a breath. Ask yourself, do you really need this?
And right here in the Southeast, we have our own climate activists who are striving to inform and empower people. People like Cara Carney.
I grew up in this tiny village called Ballywilliam, about 8 miles outside of New Ross. And yes, surrounded by fields and nature. And now in saying that, I also loved staying inside to play SingStar on the PlayStation with all the friends in my little council estate. I think being growing up in the countryside, like in Ballywilliam, definitely had an impact on the work that I do now as an activist, I think. But yeah, I'm a Ballywilliam woman at heart.
Cara is a climate activist.
Being an activist is something that we should all claim a bit more, because we shy away from it, and then there's less of us then willing to call ourselves activists, when I think we're all active in some way. Do you know, if we have chats around the climate crisis at the dinner table, or if we're planting a bee garden, a bee-friendly garden, or building bug hotels or in certain ponds, or doing cleanups with our tidy towns, like, they're all forms of activism, and I think it's good for us all to kind of claim the term, you know.
Cara is also the creator of an award-winning eco-friendly living podcast called Book of Leaves that highlights people and businesses that can help us live more sustainably. She started making Book of Leaves in 2019, and this is her fifth season.
So I set out to platform people and businesses, activists, like campaigners in Ireland that are doing something good for the planet. Because at the time in 2019, there wasn't a podcast dedicated to climate activism. And I just jumped on. It wasn't so much a bandwagon at the time, but since then, loads of people, everyone and their aunt has a podcast. But I've kept this going, which I am quite proud of.
And there is a reason behind the title Book of Leaves.
The whole objective is to platform people that are doing something good. And I remember a friend at the time told me that you'll run out of people soon. Like, there's not that many businesses or not that many activists in the scene. You'll run out of people to interview, and the opposite couldn't be more true. So the whole idea is I interview someone who's doing something good that are in the country or they're from the country. So there's a couple of people living abroad who are from here that I've also interviewed. And I and the listeners can take a leaf out of their book to add to our own way of living. Hence, it's called Book of Leaves because it's full of loads of different suggestions. And yeah, I've learned so much. You can probably hear the progression of my own activism through the seasons. Like, I now avoid kind of fast fashion, and I'm so much more knowledgeable about biodiversity and all these different things I have learned, and a lot of listeners have gotten in touch to say they have made changes as well. So it's about empowering ourselves to make the changes that we can to make a difference. And in our society, which is quite capitalistic, they're not really given platforms if it's not about money, because we don't really value nature and stable ecosystems or the circular economy or the same way we value other things.
Last year, Cara won the Climate Award at the Irish Podcast Awards for Book of Leaves, and this year she was highly commended in the same category.
I'm just one person, I edit everything myself, so it was really lovely to kind of get that recognition that it's not always about, you know, the most pristine, perfect sound quality. It's your authenticity, or the how digestible and accessible your information is. So that's always really important to me. So it was really lovely to get that recognition.
And Cara has some good advice if you want to take some climate action yourself or influence others to do so.
Well, I think there's definitely, we're very funny in Ireland about people taking notions, you know, oh, look at her notions with the keep cup there. But first off, we need to kind of like get over that and not be afraid to be proud of the little changes that we make and frame them in ways that we're not sacrificing, because a lot of climate action is framed as sacrifices. You're giving up your holidays or you're giving up your meat. There's things that you can share, and if you're passionate about them, like your friends and people around you will take on that passion and never underestimate the ripple effect you have. Don't frame everything as a sacrifice. Like, you share your love and your passion, don't underestimate the ripple effect that you can have.
Ours to Protect is funded by Cumashun na Mban with a television licence fee and is a partnership between Beat 102-103 and the Independent Broadcasters of Ireland. Check out ourstoprotect.ie for more info. The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.
You're listening to Beat on this last Sunday of 2025 on our social media literacy show that we've put together for you here on the Sunday Grill. And we've been talking about some of the issues that social media can bring to our door, especially with algorithms and doom scrolling. So let's look at some of the positives of social media. In the last hour, we chatted to some Southeast influencers on how social media has changed their lives for the better. Well, now let's look at the new business that social media has created. And there's a new wedding trend in town, and it's all about content creation on your wedding day. Emma Cawley is from Milestone Moments in County Carlow, and she's been creating wedding content, and she joined me on the Sunday Grill over the summer to talk about this new phenomena that you might have first noticed during the reels and videos that were created for the wedding of Dieran Gerahy and Mark Meehan in 2024.
Yeah, no, it is getting so busy, and we'll see all of our social media at the minute. It's mad how popular it's gone.
Tell us about it, because I've read a bit about it and people are saying, like, they no longer want the 3-hour wedding video that includes the ceremony and then the reception speeches. They really want snapshots. Would you agree with that?
100%. I think even our parents would have spoke about their wedding videos, and no one's sitting down to watch this hour long video of their wedding anymore. Mm-hmm. Everyone wants these short clips that are shareable. And as well, like, I think with the whole wedding content creation, what we offer, and I've seen many other girls doing it as well, is that you have content, videos, reels, photos back to them within 24 to 48 hours of their wedding, so they can share it with family, friends, and people can get a look at the dress and everything. So I think that's the important part of the wedding content creation is that it's fast, it's snappy,
yeah,
it's real time. And that's what social media is now. That's why it's so popular.
Yeah, of course. You're saying girls a lot there. So the groom isn't that involved, is he?
I think he just goes along with it if the bride is happy.
Okay. So tell us about yourself. Like, what did you do in college or university? How did you get into this line of business?
So I actually just finished back in May. I studied business for 4 years in Dublin City University.
Very good.
And I was doing, I suppose, since I was probably in fifth year of school, I worked in social media, content creation and other businesses and working for coffee shops and different things doing their social media. So I've always been working in social media. And then I suppose back in, I think it was maybe January of 2025, I was looking at another page that we're doing wedding content creation. And I was like, oh my God, like this is easy. I can do this. Like it, I was doing it already. I just hadn't been doing it for weddings. Mm. So I was like, I'm really like missing a part here. So anyways, just took to Instagram, made an Instagram page. And I suppose people had already known me for doing content creation already. So from there, it was kind of easy to get business straight away. But oh my God, I didn't realize it was going to take up as much as it has.
Really? So you were saying off air to me that you're at the moment you're doing about two weddings a month, but it's next year that you're getting really booked up for.
Yeah, so it's kind of last minute bookings has happened, I suppose, for 2025. People are just, you know, because they've obviously realised the wedding content creation is a big thing. And because I'm just starting off, they were like, yeah, we'll get you in and stuff. And so this year, yeah, probably about two weddings a month. And then next year, like I have a booking link to inquire, I suppose, on my Instagram. Mm. And it's all 2026, 2027 inquiries and stuff, and all over Ireland as well.
That's amazing. And you can see some of your work if you want to search for it on Instagram. It's Milestone Moments. How does it usually work? Is it the morning of the wedding? Are you expected to be there the day before? What do people look for?
So what, from my experience anyway, I have different kind of packages, I suppose. So you'd have like maybe morning prep until the ceremony, or you might have ceremony till the first dance. So it's really dependent on the bride and groom of what they want and what they want to capture of their special day. But mostly I have them getting the full, like I suppose if someone's getting you for half the day, they might as well get you for the full day.
Yeah.
And it's probably what they're thinking. So it's just dependent on what type of content they want to capture, be it the first dance or be it the doing the makeup in the morning. So it just depends on the couple themselves.
And then what are you creating? Is there kind of a package where you promise a certain amount of reels, photos? How does it work?
Yeah. So I suppose, again, I'm new to it as well. So from what I've done is like on the day, like if I'm there for the whole day, I could probably capture about 800 plus photos and videos, just kind of behind the scenes kind of work. And then after it, I'll go home and I'll make, it could be 20 plus reels or videos, short clips, depending if they want a first look or a first dance video. And I kind of put them together. At the minute in my packages, I actually don't set a limit on the videos. Mm-hmm. I know some companies do it, but I'm kind of at the stage just starting out that I want to give them as much as possible. Yeah. So it's the best time to book me.
Gorgeous. And tell me, do you ever do any like viral moments? Are they, you know, dubbing along to something that's gone viral? Does anything like that happen?
I have got asked a few times now for ones, like, you know, you'll have these voiceovers on TikTok and Instagram of brides getting ready in the morning and stuff, and they're very popular. And then you'll have the ones of like your bridesmaids taking a first look at your wedding dress.
Lovely.
They're also kind of viral clips and stuff as well. So yeah, definitely they're very much wanted, and more so I suppose from the bride than anyone else. But they're funny, and look, if whatever they want on the day, you're kind of just, you're ready to go with it.
Yeah. And you're saying a 24 to 48 hour turnaround, and yet you're taking so many videos and 800 photos. And like, I come from a world of editing, and I'm at the stage where I'm like, less is more, because you'll be editing all night. It's quite a busy couple of days for you then, is it?
Yeah. And I think the first wedding I did, I took, it was probably over 1,000 videos and stuff.
Wow.
And now I've kind of, like, as I go about, I'm narrowing it down to actually be like, no, this is actually worthwhile. Or,
yeah,
you know, you kind of pinpoint moments then instead of just gathering everything. But at the same time, it's nice to, I always send back the raw unedited clips to the bride and groom then. So they have them as well. So look, it's nice to capture everything, but yeah, it's definitely a busy couple of hours putting clips together. But
and is it
I
just
love
you
it.
Then? Different.
At the minute, it is just me.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it is. So it's busy.
Yeah, but I suppose nice and inconspicuous for the couple as well, that there's not lots of you there.
Yeah, and that's what I think. I think that's the whole thing of the wedding content creation now. It's usually, from what I've saw on Instagram, it's one or two people. Like, there's never a big crowd or anything. So you kind of blend in and you're just working. You kind of get to know the couple and you have the crack with them throughout the day as well. So it's a personal touch. Definitely.
And anything you're particularly proud of that you've captured since starting this? I know you're new to the game.
Yeah, I think I did a wedding down in the Woodlands in Adair about 2 months ago now. And we captured, they wanted a few videos in particular, but we captured their first look with the bridesmaids and the first look with the husband to be the fiance. And they were just them videos. I'm so proud of. Oh, I keep resharing them on Instagram. They were just gorgeous.
Lovely. So you can see those on Emer's Instagram, which is Milestone Moments. Have you any tips for people? You know, because I don't, you know, I know people are interested in this, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they really have thought, they almost leave the responsibility to you. Anything that the bride and groom can do for the run up to the day to kind of get ready for these shorter videos rather than, you know, just a wide shot of speeches at a reception?
Yeah, I think, well, what I've learned and what's worked really well with me and my couples is that if they send me, I'll always have a call with them maybe 3 weeks out from the wedding.
Okay.
And say, what are you liking on social media right now? What vibe are you going for with it? And they'll send me their favourite reels at the minute from maybe previous weddings that are going on. And I'll get a feel for what they kind of like, what kind of edit styles they like, because there is many different filters and edits and everything you can do, as you know, on Instagram and stuff at the minute. So I think it's just to have a really, I suppose, examples from previous weddings of what you really like and what you don't like as well. That's always a good one to get from them as well, what they don't like at all. And then you'll make sure to make them happy on the day then, I suppose.
Brilliant stuff. Such a great idea and a new business for you. So best to look with it all. It sounds like you're getting really, really busy. It's Milestone Moments and Emer Cawley is from County Carlo. If you want to have a check out of some of the videos and content that she has created for weddings over the past few months, she has some lovely stuff there on her Instagram, Milestone Moments. Best to look with it all.
Thank you so much, Aurelia.
You're
Thanks
not
going so
to have a weekend to yourself over spring and summer of 2026, it sounds like.
No, that's the negative side of it.
Yes.
But look, I love it. It's something different.
Oh, it's so brilliant to meet people on like what is the happiest day of their life, really.
Yeah, and they're always going to be in good form, hopefully.
Yeah, lovely. Well, best of luck with it. That is Milestone Moments, aka Emer Cawley. And Emer, thanks for joining me on the Sunday Grill this morning.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.